connect people, potential, technology.
As the founding partner and CEO of InnoSource Ventures, the company serves as an independent and autonomous innovation department of the multifamily office Toledo Capital, where she also serves as a board member. Adina Kraus has an extensive career in banking and wealth management, with a particular expertise in Israel's high-tech and startup ecosystem and its economic relations with the startup nation. Adina is also a thought leader in the growth, startup, and scale-up space and has led several panel discussions and business conferences. Welcome to the Swiss Capricorn podcast, Adina Kraus. Happy to have you here on board.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I always ask my podcast guests, Adina, the first question: how did you first enter the digital world in your life? Do you remember that?
Yeah, so now we're getting really nostalgic. Actually, Hotmail.
Hotmail, remember that.
So yeah. I remember my first, I didn't even have a computer or a laptop. Not even sure that they had that at the time, but my neighbor had had a computer, and then I registered for Hotmail, and I still remember my email, adina80.hotmail.com. That's what they suggested, and I it's not functioning anymore. It's not not live, but I always went to check in his house then to check my emails, and I thought it was really exciting to be able to connect to people not via phone. And look how far we came since.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you are now the founding partner and CEO of InnoSource Ventures. Mm-hmm. What do you guys actually do?
InnoSource Ventures is doing value creation for startups. That means creating strategic partnerships with corporates, licensing agreements, distribution agreements, POCs, pilots, accelerator programs. We help with the equity raise. As InnoSource is the innovation department of the family office, so we... the family office is also looking for investment opportunities, but they are only investing once we successfully start with work with a startup. That means really to we find through the work that we do, it's better than any due diligence. We actually mitigate the risk for the family office clients. Working with a startup, we very clearly and quite fast see product market fit and also operational excellence.
Product market fit and operational excellence. So that means you help the startups grow, give strategic advice, and also invest. Is that correct in some cases?
Yeah, I mean, like, we are not consultants who tell the startup what to do. We really bring the counterparties to the table and then foster these conversations. We have a very strong network with 15,000 investors and corporates, and really work together with a startup to identify who could be their strategic partners or their investors, and then we reach out and we accompany these conversations. So we work with the startups literally on almost on a daily basis. Definitely we speak to them several times a week, and because bridges are built from both sides, we also serve corporates in innovation scouting. That means that we are mandated by a corporate in order to jumpstart their innovation. So that's mainly for corporates that don't have their own in-house scout. So they scout through us, have a certain target, something that they would like to develop. We define it together with them. We then go out under the name of InnoSource to scout the startups and bring them to the table. We analyze that it's really the match that they're looking for, introduce those that we find are a fit, and then foster these conversations between them. And first, it's also like anonymous, so that their competitors don't find out what they're looking for right now. And then we bring them into the conversation together, and then by then they know.
Mm-hmm. With how many do you work together at the moment? How many startups?
Oh, we have 17 startups that we're working with in different verticals, which are healthcare, tech, and sustainability.
And where are they based geographically, these startups?
So at the beginning, we only focused on the Israeli ecosystem because obviously it's a very strong ecosystem. Israel is known as Startup Nation, and that was also a market that, because I worked there myself for many, many years, So I had the best network. But in the meantime, we expanded mm-hmm. to Europe as well. And there are significant differences between the cultures and between the how the startups are managed. So I think we're really able to give to both sides quite some learning. Mm-hmm. While in Israel, very often they are visionaries, and then the company building maybe, and I think we're getting to this later on, the company building maybe is the second priority. In Europe, company building comes first, but then very often momentum is missed. So we kind of accompany both of them, mm-hmm. both regions.
And Adina, with your experience now working with a startup, so what are the challenges many founders face when scaling a company from a startup to a scale-up? What is your experience?
Scaling doesn't mean that the founder steps back. It means they grow with the company. One of the biggest challenges is evolving from building the product to building the organization. And that means also, and that I think you know quite well, hiring well, aligning people fast, and keeping the mission clear, even as the complexity grows. And it's very important to understand that the founders already had the first success story when they really built the startup and reached the scaling phase, but then it restarts. Like they have to start from the beginning again in order to get the growth startup over the finish line.
So once you reach the scale up phase, you have to basically start from scratch again. Is that what you're saying? In a way,
mm-hmm. it's not mm-hmm. completely from scratch, yeah. but it's like it's not like different slate. Areas. Yeah. But it's always mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. at the beginning, you need to get the startup out of this valley. Mm-hmm. Once you did that, so it's a major accomplishment. But mm-hmm. you're not
sort of the next step.
Exactly. So the next step mm-hmm. goes further, mm-hmm. and that's equal challenges. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always mean that the founders of a startup are then also the growth stage CEOs. But then also founders, I mean, for a founder, their startup is the baby. And there's a lot of challenges coming mm-hmm. with that. And founders have to understand also when to learn how to delegate. And I know that for myself, by the way. I was forced into delegation, and now I'm super happy that I did it. But it's not something that comes natural. So you have to really also develop your own skills in order to get to the scale.
Have you experienced it that a founder was maybe also kicked out of the company? Was that something you experienced?
Yes, of course. Okay. And actually, that was mm-hmm. not long ago also in the mm-hmm. Israeli startup news. Mm-hmm. Quite some soap opera where the board mm-hmm. really kicked out the CEO, and then he wrote an email to all the employees saying that he doesn't intend. So it was literally a really strong soap opera. And of course, and that's actually painful and uncomfortable, very often also not justified. We're going through this actually right now with one of our startups. And it's not, we wasn't kicked out, he quit. But it brings a lot of challenges. Also for us in our function, because then you're working with different people and the startup changes.
Yeah, Dina, I also want to talk about hiring the best talent. Maybe you can tell us about what kind of talent you need in the startup phase and then maybe also in the scale-up phase. So what is your experience there?
Yeah, I think first of all, it's important to identify what does best talent mean, right? Best talent doesn't mean the top shots from the corporate world, but it has to be a real match mm-hmm. for the startup. And that's very important to internalize, to take somebody with the right experience. And it doesn't necessarily mean the corporate experience. So it's very important also to understand that top talent has options. You're not just offering a role. You're offering a narrative. The biggest challenge is communicating why someone should choose your uncertainty over someone else's stability. Vision matters, but so does clarity, pace, and then also leadership, integrity, basically. So hiring for a startup, of course, needs entrepreneurial mindset and entrepreneurial skills. Not only thinking, oh, I'd love to, you know, enter the startup world, that comes very often also at a costly price and with a lot of uncertainty, with a lot of volatility that, once again, you don't have in a corporate. Although the last years also have shown that also corporate doesn't mean anymore that you are 20, 30 years in the same job. So it's pluses and minuses. Mm-hmm. And the talent also has to understand what's really the good thing for mm-hmm. us.
Do you think people have the wrong impression about the startup world, or maybe glorify even in some cases what working for a startup means?
Absolutely. And I'm seeing this now where I'm literally weekly contacted by corporate people with impressive resumes, right? And then they said, like, I had it not long ago, somebody contacted me and said, like, you know what, I have, 25 years of corporate experience. I think it's time now to go into the startup world. I'd like to support startups with my corporate knowledge. I think I can give them a lot of added value. And I was wondering if you have your established startups that could be interested in my profile and are able to match my corporate salary. And I almost started laughing. I had to hold myself back, right? But then you see that it's like, that's not working. Like,
so it's
working
like a
in a startup, yeah, absolutely.
It's a misalignment.
It's a misalignment. Mm-hmm. And while I really enjoy every day that I'm doing, because every day something new is happening, but it's people have to also be able to live up with this pace mm-hmm. And the volatility connected to that.
So it's a real roller coaster ride. So people have to know how to deal with that and the uncertainty all the good, but also the bad things that,
absolutely.
That come with it.
And I think the roller coaster is a real life experience. And I love riding roller coasters. That's really something that every year I'm still going, to Europa Park. and I'm trying all the roller coasters to make sure that I didn't get old yet. But I also realized, like, I had it long ago. One of our founders says, Adina, something is going to happen by us. Like, we'll enter roller coaster phase. And then I'm like, and I really like the roller coasters. I was like, oh, no. So he said, okay, another day in paradise. And that's what our slogan was. Mm-hmm. And literally every day things were like, it was ups and downs. And you have to also join this phase, which is not always the fun part.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned something interesting. The narrative is important also as a leader to communicate the vision, the right pace, leadership, and integrity. Is there anything else that a company can do to attract or retain talent?
I mean, this whole thing with attracting and retaining, I think these are two different subjects, because I think attracting is one thing and then retaining is the other one, because you can sell any narrative and you can, describe the bubble, but then you have to also live up to it and to have to retain. And I think it's about matching expectations. And I'm always very, like, people consider me quite direct, and because I'm always, I have the feeling I have to match expectations also before conversation, because otherwise it's frustrating for both sides. Attracting talent is about purpose and potential, and retention then is about trust and growth. People stay when they feel challenged, when they feel hurt, they want to be part of something meaningful, and then they leave when things get political or when they stop learning, and that can be today way too fast. Like, sometimes they're also the, even if the startup is offering it, it's not going so fast. Like, in 3 months or in 6 months or in 9 months, you don't get over the finish line. And you see this, the data, I don't know the current data, but like a year and a half ago in Silicon Valley, developers, they stayed for an average of 9 months at a startup. And then they moved on, like looking at Switzerland, as I said, where people work 20 years in a corporate. there's a huge discrepancy in these kind of things. And that's also a certain instability for a company if you always have to rehire. So on the one hand, you do get good input. You get, you can you can move forward, but sometimes it's a bit too fast.
And important, as you mentioned, the challenge, giving the candidates the right challenge, being heard and matching the expectations. That's also very important.
Yeah, that's very important. At InnoSource Ventures, what we started, I think it was 3 years ago, a feedback session on Fridays, and actually a corporate person told me, why would you do that? But I realized that, especially dealing with people who are like starting off their career, that sometimes the expectations are different. They don't know how to express it, and within 2 or 3 months, like sometimes you can just, you know, clarify it. And I always say, share your experience of the week. What was your impression? I learned from it. They learned from it. They can impress. They can express, and they also understand their own shortcomings. And they would forget it if it's like 2 or 3 months later, then they only see all, you know, the glorious things, so the glorification of themselves. And here you can see, you can have a weekly thing and say, okay, here, this is my feedback. This is how I felt about you, without doing like these personal conversations. But it brings the companies, like I feel that it brings the people together.
So feedback sessions could be a good learning experience for both parties, stakeholders.
For me, I think I find it very helpful.
Adina, what could candidates do to remain attractive in the job market? I mean, it's a fast-changing job market, not only for companies, but also for candidates. So what do you think candidates could do to stay relevant in the market?
I think it's about staying sharp, staying visible. Mm-hmm. It also means continuous learning, not just the tools, but also problem solving and the communication. Communication is always key. Build a portfolio of outcomes, not just job titles. So people who rise are the one who bridge business and technology and not just operate in one lane.
Mm-hmm. So communication, always learning is important, and then this portfolio of outcomes.
To adapt to the situation and the agility of that. Mm-hmm.
You are also aware and exposed to the tech world. How important do you think is remote working nowadays? Because when I recruit for tech jobs, I hear a lot candidates saying, can I work remotely? So how do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, it's essential. Remote isn't a perk anymore, it's standard. Flexibility has become a non-negotiable part for the top tech talent. And companies that resist it will lose to the global talent pool. But then it also depends. I mean, I joined an interview session with one of our startups for a developer, and the guy came smoking into the call, okay, with, I don't know, hot pants or whatever that short pants were that I saw. And, you know, he started already, okay, Monday and Friday, remote, and it was very...
It was a bit too casual.
It was very, very casual. But also I felt that the demand from the talent side was way too much. And I said, no, I opposed.
And now AI is changing the world at the moment. What do you think, what kind of jobs will disappear? What jobs will remain? And what jobs will be newly created? What is your view here?
So... A couple of months ago, I still heard that people were really scared of AI and losing their jobs to AI. And I said, like, you're not losing your jobs to AI, but you will lose your jobs to people who are willing to work with AI. And I always compared a little bit to when, you know, in school, when we were given a calculator, and we all thought, oh, great, our life has solved. We don't have to calculate anymore. And the calculator does everything until, like, pretty fast you understand that your input is still needed and it doesn't really get easier. So I think AI... resolves anything repetitive, rules-based, low context. So that's really at risk, if you want to call it so. Think data entry, basic coding, low-level analytics. But what will remain are roles requiring judgment and creativity, empathy, leadership. And there we're already seeing also new roles like prompt engineers, AI workflow architects, ethical compliance leads. AI doesn't eliminate humans. It elevates the ones who adopt. And I used to be also quite critical. And I have to say, in the last couple of months, it's pretty amazing. One example, we always create call reports when we have the calls, right? And our associates came up with AI, I'm talking about 2-3 years ago, I wasn't keen. I said, you have to learn actually to extract from the conversation the main points, and I want you to do it because I want you to think. And then also the AI reports were not very good. Very often they didn't understand the dialect. Stuff was not relevant that they wrote. But I have to say, in the last weeks actually, like now Zoom, for example, they send it to you. I'm like, wow. Yesterday I had a call in Hebrew and I got an English AI report afterwards. It was not perfect. Yeah, there were some things that didn't match, like the changing of the sites and so on. But they knew to cut out the small talk and really you know, to write about it. So there is, there was a huge growth, but I still think it needs the human to go over it and to understand that. And I'm a bit, not sad, but I feel also like the learning experience will go, because people will use that at the end of the day and then just read that. And then they're not able to really do that themselves. And I think it's similar with handwriting. I see that myself. I had a beautiful handwriting. It has changed because I don't have the practice anymore, right? You're all the time on emails, you're all the time on WhatsApps or whatever. So it has changed.
So do you think the ability to learn or even critical thinking will maybe we will lose a little bit?
Yeah, I do think so. And that's also the negative part about it.
Definitely. So, it will elevate humans that have the ability to adapt to the new technology. I would like to ask you a self-reflective question. What is your superpower, the area that you are maybe a little bit better than other people?
So I guess it's my people skills. Like, I have a huge and established network. And I remember, I think when I was like 12 or 13 and I went into school and everybody said, oh, hi, Adina, how are you doing? And, you know, going through this adolescent period, I said, okay, then I had to change schools. And I said, okay, next time I'll make sure nobody knows me. It's not possible. And it didn't work. And everybody said, oh, hi, are you? Whatever, because that's my personality. And then I just decided to embrace that and appreciate it actually as a gift that I got. And so I recently had, for example, like I had a celebration in the family. A lot of friends came from abroad, and then a neighbor asked, "Oh, so how do you know Adina?" And then the answer was, "I'm Adina's friend, but I'm really her friend." And five people said the same. So my neighbor was laughing actually. I guess is the superpower.
Yeah, it's a good superpower to have. Okay. Is there a personality or a person that you particularly admire that people know, or certain traits you admire of this person or several persons?
Taking the risk of getting a lot of criticism now from the people listening to this. And also, I don't know when you're publishing it, so we don't know what the development will be by then. But I was, I stumbled over Hillbilly Elegy.
It was a movie on Netflix.
Yes, right. So, yes.
And a book, right?
Right, but I watched the movie, okay. And it's actually the biography of J.D. Vance. Mm-hmm. And I watched it before he was chosen as VP. And at the time, it really brought tears into my eyes. And then I watched it again with my then 11-year-old son, and it left a lasting impression on him, too. So when he then was elected, So my son said, oh, this is a guy that didn't know how to eat fork and knife. So I think like somebody who has come so far and achieved so much is in the right place. And I hope whenever this is screened, as I said, it will be still a relevant answer. He's still young in terms of politics, but I also think that's quite hopeful in terms of development. I was really super impressed. Where he came from and then where he got, I think you can't achieve more than he did.
Very impressive track record from where he came.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a mission statement, a motto, a credo in your life that you live by?
Clarity over certainty. You won't always have all the answers, but if you can give people direction and purpose, they'll build the answers together with you. I push really for clear priorities, even when we don't know all the outcomes. Momentum comes from focus and not from perfection. And perfection very often holds you also back. So, and one of the most important, it's not even a statement or like motto, it's like... in Hebrew, we say "Oima ve'oise." Germany would say, "I think gesagt getan." Let's get it done. Exactly. I don't really push things off.
Yeah, clarity over certainty. I like that. As a final question, Adina, I would like to know, how will AI change your life in 2 years?
I expect to give it back, give me back time, and really, you're speaking here to somebody who has been critical or was critical in the past, and now I've seen the learning curve that AI did. So a lot of stuff that really was very time consuming is just getting done in a couple of minutes. So there's less friction in admin, faster research, more insights on demand. But more importantly, I also expect AI to amplify my ability to coach and support startups with sharper data, faster diagnostics, and better decision support.
Adina Kraus, founding partner and CEO of InnoSource Ventures, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. Looking forward to our next one. And yeah, I wish you success and nothing less.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking to you.
People, potential, technology.